Lembit Opik on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Good morning, Planet Earth. Lembit Opik broadcasting live from London to the world. Wherever you are, thank you for joining me here on today's News Talk TNT, where we find the facts, kill the spin, and tell it like it is and as we see it. You'll get our opinions too, but we never mix those up with the facts so that you can draw your conclusions based on what I hope is the most honest broadcasting platform on the planet. Coming up today, we will be talking about the situation in Israel and Iran. Unless you've been living under a rock, you'll know that there was an attack for the first time in the history of the Islamic Republic against Israel directly. We'll talk about that later on. Where will this lead? Will it lead to a regional war? What will be the implications for the world? We'll have to cover that as well. But we won't be covering that exclusively. We'll also be covering local politics in the United Kingdom, or domestic politics, if you like, as well as a general international take, including a visit to the United States. Indeed, I was in the US last week in Dallas, as you'll recall, for the total eclipse. So what we're going to be doing in these 4 hours is giving you all the tools you need to draw your conclusions. But before we go any further, Seb, more music to hang yourself to, give it a rest. You say, well, I was having a chat with my first guest about this. Music is a matter of taste. Fully accept you may not like that. Well, I play progressive rock and folk music all the time. That might be even worse for you, but that's what I grew up with, and that's how it would be if I was in charge. Wee Fat Chug said it's also angst-ridden nowadays. Well, so's the planet, Wee Fat Chug. It's just reflective of the news we have to cover. But point taken, I don't choose the music, by the way. So I'll hide behind other people here. Monopoly says, when I manage to remove the rope from my neck, I'm looking forward to the next show. Thank you. There'll be no hanging on my show. Even though we talk about heavy and potentially quite disturbing things about the world, I don't want you to take a running jump in the process. At the end of the day, I believe that dialogue is the only way forward. Perhaps I'm an idealist. Maybe that's why I'm not a British MP anymore. But as far as I'm concerned, joy is better than war, to quote Winston Churchill, and so it shall remain on today's News Talk TNT. In a moment, we'll be speaking to the health and social policy spokesperson for UKIP, the UK Independence Party, arguably the most successful party in recent political history. Dr. Chris Hill will be joining me. I'll also be talking to him about the party's leadership election campaign, which is going on at the moment, and the situation in Israel and Iran. Everyone has a valid point of view on this at the moment, and it's something we can't avoid. But I'd like to hear your views too, not just about the music, folks. I get the point about the music. I can't change it. Good morning, Holly, by the way. And thanks for being concerned about me yesterday. I just overheated because it was too hot in my studio. But one and all, welcome, and do join in with the conversation. You'll be able to do that on the chat. It always goes faster than I can keep up with it. So apologies if I don't read out your message. It'll still be there. You get the most from today's News Talk TNT by logging into the chat or phoning in as well. When we get the chance, we'll get your phone calls in. There's no censorship. You can agree, disagree, criticize or praise. That's the essence of free speech. And that's what today's News Talk is all about. So go to tntradio.live and get involved in the chat there. There's no holds barred here. You're allowed to say anything you like. Please don't swear, though, because we do have children listening as well, and I'd rather not cause offence to them. But with that condition, that's the only request I have. You can say anything you like. So coming up in a moment, we've got Dr. Ho. He'll be talking about medical and social matters, as well as his party and the international scene. All of that with me, Lembit Opik, on The Lembit Opik Show, right here on TNT.
The latest headlines waiting for you.
I follow the news pretty much throughout the day.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And just before we go to my first guest, Monopodsbees, I can't say that, says, you seem a great bunch of folks here. Love the humor. Yes, there is. One of the funniest things I ever read was about whether a horse could be done by facial recognition on a camera on a road. I think that was one of Holly's. So well done for that. But somebody else who is joining us now is my first guest, Dr. Chris Ho from the UK Independence Party. Good morning to you, Chris. Thanks for joining us here on today's News Talk TNT.
Good morning, Lembit.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all. You're in UKIP, the UK Independence Party, and you hold a specific portfolio.
I am a migrant. I'm from Singapore, and I came here to study at Glasgow University. And I loved it so much, I stayed afterwards. I trained as a GP, and I've been working as a GP for the last 12 years now. And over the course of my time here, I found that my political alignments align best with UKIP, and so I joined them as a member. And then very recently, about 3 or 4 months ago, I was asked to be their health and social care spokesperson. So that's been my role over the last few months.
I had an interesting experience in Singapore, not relevant to news, but I went to visit some friends there and they had a swimming pool and they were absolutely determined to show me the swimming pool. And we got in and there was a thunderstorm. And I said, are you sure this is safe? They went, oh, it doesn't matter. We always do this. That's not very safe though, is it, Chris? Being in the swimming pool during a thunderstorm.
No. I'm not sure why they wanted you to try the swimming pool there. Are you sure they were your friends?
They were American. And they wanted to show off, I don't know, their opulent lifestyle or something. But I was slightly concerned about that. The other thing that we had was pre-prepared oysters and shells which had been opened. And I thought that was really unwise as well. But I went along with it. I was young. I was in my early 30s at the time. And I am here to tell the tale, though it was quite frightening because the thunderstorm was overhead. Anyway, leaving that little personal revelation aside, some would say that you're, this is cruel, what I'm going to say. Some would say that you've got a portfolio in UKIP because there's no one else left.
Well, that's how lots of things work in the corporate world. In just about any sector, you know, people leave, people quit, you know, people retire, and the next generation moves up to replace them. So not sure how that's cruel. That's just the way the world works.
When I was leader of National Party, the Liberal Democrats in Wales at one time, I built it to its most successful period in its history. And it was all lost by my successors, all of it. But I just had to let go. I like to think of it as evidence that they've never found anyone as good as me. But I'm not sure that's the reason. I suspect it was the absolutely abysmal performance of the UK party leader, Nick Clegg, that was largely responsible for it. Maybe some of his cronies, too. But just before we go into talking about policy areas, Chris, I went to the UK Independence Party conference to actually talk about why I don't think there's a climate crisis. Find them very agreeable people. It was in Newport in Wales. The party, nevertheless, has been struggling in the polls, but it seems to be surviving. I introduced your party earlier on as the most successful party in recent political history because you achieved your core objective, which was the withdrawal of the UK from the European Union. But the question I always ask people from UKIP is, having fulfilled that core mission objective, it must be quite challenging to reinvent yourself.
I'm not even sure we achieved that. You know, if you ask a fair number of us, I would say we may have achieved it in name only, but practically speaking, there's a number of areas where we haven't achieved what we set out to achieve. You know, leaving the European Court of Justice, the Commission of Human Rights, fishing areas, the fact that we still make payments to the EU, you know, there's a fair number of areas where we haven't achieved the complete Brexit that we were looking for. And, you know, whilst Brexit might have been the primary objective, you know, for the first 25 years that UKIP was set up with, even if we did achieve the Brexit that we were looking for, there's a fair number of other things in our manifesto that covers, you know, national policy, local policy, that we stand for too. So, you know, I think apart from the fact that there are other alternative right-wing parties that have propped up to offer people options, UKIP would have been here to stay anyways.
Organisms fight for survival. And I can say with some humility, the party for which I exclusively served as a member of parliament, that was Lib Dems, they took a massive tumble. They pretty much collapsed in 2015. And as I say, I think it was because of Nick Clegg. I think he was an abysmal leader. Yep. But they're still there. Is there ever a case? I won't really dwell on this, but I'll just get this out of the way now. Is there ever really a case for a party to say, we've done our job, it's time to move on? And you could, for example, move to Reform, where Nigel Farage, who was a very powerful voice for UKIP, is now resident. And it would combine the firepower instead of splitting it up into lots of small parties.
Yes, I think there definitely is a need for a unified right-wing alternative to the Tories, of course, whom I don't consider right-wing by any measure. So I think in an ideal world, I would like to see the various right-wing options work together, if not unify. And the position of UKIP is that we've been very happy to work with Reform, and indeed we have in most recent elections where we've had some mutual agreements to not stand against each other in certain areas. But it seems to be that Reform are slightly reluctant to work with us on this. Mm-hmm. Maybe that might change in the future, and that's what I would hope for.
Well, we shall see. And I don't want to push you down that path further because we're really here to talk about UK Independence Party and your views. Just a quick question about your own position. As a portfolio holder, do you have to stand for Parliament yourself?
I have been, yes. I've stood in two or three areas here for local elections, and I believe one previous, the last general election. Yes, I am a standing member of UKIP.
People keep asking me if I'm going to stand for Parliament again. Maybe, but not in this country. That's my feeling these days. I've served my purpose. It's not much of an exclusive to say that I am thinking about standing for President of Estonia one day, but I'll have to live there for a while first. But don't worry, that's all in the future. I'm not getting on a plane today, because I've flown 35,000 kilometers in the last 12 days, and that's enough for now. That's enough for now. Observing a total eclipse of the sun. Well, we are going to see if you can bring UKIP out of a partial eclipse in the next part of the show. If you've got questions and comments for Dr. Chris Ho, or just comments really on their own, you can get those to me through tntradio.live, or you can phone in as well if you want to, and I shall try and share those with you. There's a few comments coming along here. Annie H is a fairly strong comment, which I'll share just after the break. You're listening to the Len Petopic Show right here on today's News Talk TNT. See you in a moment.
Johnny Vedmore, TNT.
Whenever we examine evidence, we discover a range of new information. And some of the information involving the COVID-19 pandemic is truly uncomfortable. I'm still impressed by the strength of those with medical expertise who are still organizing and fighting for those who are being left behind. There is a change happening in the world, and change is extremely important. People are realizing that it is do or die, and that without a fight, this sort of tragedy will happen again. We must lift the voices of those who have been ignored, and we will be looking for those voices to come on the Johnny Vedmore Show to speak out loud and proud.
Talk that matters. Johnny Vedmore on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in.
They trust TNT Radio
and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts.
It isn't a theory.
It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembotopic Show. I second that emotion. There is no climate emergency. I've just written an article for the Light paper about this. It should come out fairly soon, assuming the editor, Darren, is minded to put that in. But let's go back to the chats before we go back to Dr. Chris Hope, who's my first guest today. Refat Shug says something nice. I was saying that I can't keep up with your chat. And he says, the measure of a successful show, Lembit, chatbox speed. I tend to agree with you. Good luck with your browser, by the way, Refat Shug. And Seb says, perhaps my all-time favorite protest song in only 2 minutes, 24 seconds, it would be easy. So easy. And he's got a link for that as well. I'll listen to it, but not before I finish the show today. Thank you for that. Maybe we finally find a point of agreement, Seb. Hooray! Hooray! I didn't convince you with the eclipse, did I? Moving on, Mogden says, I have to admit that I'm not that keen on some of the music. But having bought a guitar during the first lockup, or lockdown, with the intention to learn, I admire anyone that can play and sing at the same time. I actually happen to be a professional harmonica player. I've actually played with some very major bands, including the Kaiser Chiefs, would you believe? But that's from another part of my life. Annie H, don't leave. Annie H says, if Lemba's going to talk about reform and Farage, I'll be turning off. They are World Economic Forum. No, Annie, I'm not really going to be talking about reform. I'm talking about UKIP, and more specifically, Chris Ho's views. He's a person, not an institution, though some may think of him as an institution, of course. Just a couple more. Holly says, The Light is an excellent publication. Well, I do hope, yeah, and sure he will. Well, Holly, I hope that he does publish it. I spent quite a long time on aeroplanes writing that. Interesting long one from Seb there, which I haven't got time to look at, and some other links as well. Okay, do keep your calls and comments coming. A lot of you on air today, online. I consider you to be on air when you're there, because the whole world can see your commentary. And that's what makes this so good. Unedited, uncensored free speech. And Dr. Chris Ho, you're welcome back to the show with your UKIP portfolio. What does it mean to talk about health and social care?
Well, the main bit of my role is I get to direct the health and social care policies. So, I've been given what was our existing policies from before. And if I saw any areas where there could be changes, then I could propose them. And I occasionally put out articles as well about health and social care news. I'm essentially just a correspondent liaison for people wanting to speak to UKIP, or for UKIP to speak to its members about with regards to health and social care policy.
You say just a correspondent, it makes you sound like a messenger, but surely you must all be a creator of policy. Sounds a bit like Oppenheimer now. You're the creator of life. Surely you do have to write the policies as well, or at least evolve them.
We have a fairly comprehensive manifesto when it comes to health and social care anyways, but if I get any bright light bulbs going off in my head, I could certainly propose new policy for the party to consider.
So two things I want to cover in this part of the show, and in the next part, let's talk about international politics. I think we have to. You've got a leadership election at the moment, and you've got a couple of candidates. So we asked them both to come on, and one of them did. Bill came on, and Bill Etheridge. Is there an ideological debate going on about which of those individuals should lead the party?
I'm not entirely sure. I don't know them, either of them personally. I've seen some of the statements they've put out. I haven't seen any clear and obvious differences. They may differ slightly in certain areas, but I haven't seen any major ideological gap between them.
Bill came on, and as I say, both were invited, but Bill did come on and accepted it, and we had a very interesting conversation. And he does echo some, in fairness, some of the things that you say, that there needs to be some kind of an alignment on the non-Labour side, if you like. And he had some pretty interesting ideas. He's also quite experienced, I think. But let's look at the ideology of UKIP. Now, you said it quite euphemistically. But you said that maybe Brexit hasn't been done. What do you mean by that?
I'm clearly a Brexiteer, and the reasons for my decision behind that was that I clearly saw the EU as an authoritarian, extranational body in interfering in UK politics. In voting for Brexit, I had hoped that we would be able to throw off the influence of the EU on in all sorts of areas. I didn't see that we were getting much bang for our buck in our EU contributions. I wanted us to contribute less, if not none at all, to the EU budget. I didn't like that our legal system was subject to the influence of European courts and judges. I didn't like the fact that our fishing rights were sold off or given away to the EU. So, when the Brexit triumph, I suppose, was achieved, I would have liked to see, well, me personally, I would have wanted to see plenty of moves made to that regard, but I haven't seen them. So, we may have achieved it in name and in some certain small areas, but it's not the type of Brexit that I believe the party want.
Now, a couple of things you said there. One was about the fishing rights being sold off. As I understood it, the fishermen sold them off themselves. They sold their quotas. You can't really blame Westminster for the economic decisions of fishermen who then moaned about not having fishing rights. Or did I misunderstand that?
Well, I might be wrong on this, but from what I understand it, they had to sell their fishing right. The fishermen had to sell their quotas because they couldn't compete when our fishing grounds are shared with EU fishing industry. So if you had to compete in the same fishing grounds and you weren't able to sustain your industry, then and you had plenty of other regulations on the type of fishing they had to do the quotas on various different stocks of fish, species of fish. So I think they were more driven to that, selling their quotas because of regulation and policy.
So you've got, we can go further down that, but I suspect most of our viewers are not English fishermen. We probably won't go further, or British fishermen. The other point that I found interesting that you made is that we had overbearing regulations and legislation. And yet, I don't really see much change. I do know that if you have a British passport now and you spend more than half your time in any 6 months in the EU, it's a crime. It's an offence. Now, I don't think a lot of people know this. So I can't see exactly how we've liberated ourselves from the EU if, in name only, we've left. Tell me more about what you think should have happened, because I guess you must have specific answers to that question if you feel that we've only done it in name only.
Okay. I mean, I can only posit that leaving the EU was something that the EU didn't want, of course. And since it supposedly happened, then there are a number of measures taken on both sides that actually haven't benefited either party. What I would like to have seen was more grown up. Maybe it was ideal thinking, idealistic thinking that a clean break could be made maturely on both sides with nothing but collaborative efforts in the future. You know, things like free trade would have made sense, that kind of thing. So I can only posit that in the aftermath of the Brexit decision, and actually even before, there were loads of news about potentially punitive measures being put in place on both sides as a deterrent to the public and the voting public to actually vote for Brexit. You know, we saw things like would Wi-Fi use in the EU be charged after Brexit, or silly things like that, immature, I would say, things like that. They might have never have been true, of course. They might just have been fake news put out by biased media just to put a fear in the voting public. Now this. I take it when you say if we spend more than 6 months, if British passport holders spend more than 6 months in the EU, it's a crime. I take it you mean by overstaying of a travel allowance or a travel visa.
The rule is, roughly speaking, if you spend more than 90 days in any 180, roughly speaking, then that's an offence. I was told by a gleeful border officer in Frankfurt Airport who went through my passport and added up the number of days I'd been in the European Union. I mean, that's how I found out. I travel a lot. I travel almost every week. And he gleefully, it took him about 15 minutes. He gleefully went through just to explain to me that the UK's decision to leave the EU carried this consequence. Who knew? That's what I found out. I didn't know from any politician. I've never read about it.
You, the way it is, then. So he's telling you that his opinion is that it's been a punishing measure put on the UK because of Brexit. Yeah,
It felt to me like he was punishing me. It felt to me, what harm would it do for me to be in the EU for more than half the time, especially because I was doing business there, I was making money for Europe.
Well, you would think that money talks quite a lot, but there may be some ideologies that speak even louder than money.
Yeah, well, the reason I raise this is because it tends to subscribe to your belief that we didn't get Brexit done. But at the same time, I'm not sure it's that attractive to people. If you want to live or spend 7 months a year in Spain on holiday because you're retired, you've got a problem now, because in the past you could just go there, you could even work there, and now you can't. So what does UKIP's Brexit look like compared to what we have now?
Okay, well, if I was given the keys to the castle, then I would propose to the EU that we do things maturely. You know, that if they treated British nationals with civility and had none of these supposedly punitive measures, then we would do the same. You know, that we would treat EU nationals who come here maturely, without any how would you describe it? Restrictive measures simply for the sake of restriction. You know, so measures that are you know, just as was done to you, seen as there's no benefit treating you the way they treated you. So,
but arguably there is, though, Chris, because if they don't punish the United Kingdom, it seems to me that Italy and Greece might say, well, it's working for the UK, maybe we should leave too. And if Italy and Greece leave, then the European project will be essentially in tatters. So it's not really to punish us, it's to warn others to not take the exit route.
I certainly see that point. Yes, I certainly see that point. I think that would only drive others to the further along the line of potentially leaving the EU. I would say these measures by the EU, they might think it is benefiting them to deter other nations from leaving. I potentially see that it could have the opposite effect. In fact, lots of government policies seem to have the opposite effect for which they try and achieve, and that is behaving immaturely, so to speak, and being authoritarian would drive people further along the line of being put off.
It could be the case, though, that Greece and Italy think we are so heavily in debt to the European Union already, with all these other potential restrictions, we'd better stay even if we don't like it.
That's true. So I mean, there's plenty of factors that might go about that might potentially even bring about the breakup of the EU. I think the biggest one has to be, how long is the German taxpayer going to continue funding the EU? So that's the main thing. You know, it might. I'm sure it will be increasingly difficult for others to leave as well. You know, even considering the positions of, say, the Netherlands with Geert Wilders and France with, you know, well, I don't know if Macron would continue in their next election, but you know, I think the biggest factor has to be, how long can the EU continue to be funded by the German taxpayer?
It's an interesting point, though, that Germany also wields enormous power now across the European Union because it owns it. It owns a lot of the debt, which is risky as well, of course, if they collapse. I've got quite a lot of comments coming in, which I'll come back to after the break. But if you were to summarize, then you're in the middle of a leadership election now. If you were to summarize where you want the UK Independence Party to be at the time of the local elections and also for the general election, from a political point of view, if you had to summarize it in a sentence, what would you like people to think they're voting for if they vote UKIP?
Okay, in one sentence, I would like to include two or three major
areas.
That's
fine. Yeah, go ahead.
Trust us to control immigration. We are the ones that are most likely to try and work with the other right-wing alternatives. And that's it. That's the two main areas.
Okay, that was very succinct. We'll come back to that later, because after the break, I want to talk to you about a developing story from the week, which is now being pushed off the agenda, which is record number of boat crossings recently across the channel, which nobody seems to be able to fix, nobody in authority anyway, and also the situation between... Well, that's what I want to ask you. That's what I want to ask you, because there could be an economic reason for exactly what you said. And since you and I both come from migrant stock, we've got a particular, I don't know, maybe an insight, I don't know, on that subject. And I'll share with you what my late parents considered relevant about that. And also then we do need to touch on the Israel-Iran question, not because you're in UKIP, but because you're in politics. And I do think we need to touch on that as well. It's a very unstable situation. You're listening to Dr. Chris Ho with me, Len Bitopic, here on today's News Talk TNT. I'll see you in a minute.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything, with innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first DWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you will never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
I have a feeling these are the suspects in question. The two occupants look like the people involved in the armed robbery. I'm approaching the vehicle. Request backup. The driver matches the description because of a wide-set nose.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go, but I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there, providing hot meals, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding.
To learn more, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
Len Bitopic on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Len Bitopic Show here on today's News Talk, TNT. Before we go back to my guest to talk about the international situation and also the boat crossings across the English Channel, let me read some of the messages that you've put in here. Quite a lot of talk about music. We Fat Chuck say, I play some basic chords every day, but have no musical knowledge or talent, sadly. Just love guitar and always have loud and quiet ones. Fair play, we Fat Chuck. Seb says, I've been toying around with a harmonica. Can take one anywhere. I'm hoping to get arrested and sent to jail so I can learn to play it properly. I think you have a slightly Shawshank Redemption view of prison, but okay, maybe that's the plan. Strange one, but a plan all the same. A few other ones. And we've been talking about Brexit with my guest from UKIP, Dr. Chris Ho. Wee Fat Chuck says, Brexit, oh, LOL, that's all I can say. Seb adds, I liken it to getting divorced, but remaining living with your ex and having to abide by exactly the same rules and protocols which made you want a divorce in the first place. I have some sympathy with that. Blodister says, who cares? Well, okay, fair enough. Stick around for the next guest if you're not interested in this one. How dare you, though? I think Chris is pretty good. Pretty good analyst when it comes to what's maybe gone wrong with Brexit, for those who like Brexit. Apparently the weather's good where we Fat Chuck is. Holly says, forget Europe and forget the weak MPs who didn't do what the people voted for. Sometimes, yes, I know, I slightly change the language I read out. I'm thinking about children, that's what I'm doing. Seb adds, the only Brexit deal would be a no deal Brexit. You can't build a solid structure on compromised and crumbling foundations. And there are many more here. Holly says, I think they've had enough money for an unelected bunch of time wasters. And on it goes. One more from Holly. They're all clinging together for dear life. No one will take responsibility for the disaster that the Eurozone is. With Hemingway adding, Macron has already admitted to the French people that he isn't going to give them a Frexit vote because he knows that the government would lose. Now, here's the thing. Before we go into the two other areas, Chris, the EU doesn't seem to be very popular with a lot of countries. Do you think if there were referendums in other countries, they would follow the British lead and leave?
I certainly think there's a chance of that. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we could see the swing in elections in some of the other countries. I mean, Italy, Netherlands, a good example, Sweden. So I think that if the EU doesn't change the way it does things, and we're talking wholesale reform of the way they do things, then it would only continue to steer, I suppose, populist, nationalist movement in some of the other nations. So I think there's certainly a risk of that, yeah.
Let's talk. There's more to say about that, but I want to cover two other areas with you, and the time goes so awfully fast. One of the reasons, well, key reason why we've invited you on to today's News Talk TNT is because of a subject which has been pushed off the media agenda in the mainstream at the moment, mainly because of the other subject we'll talk about in a minute, which is Israel-Iran. But it's the apparently record number of boat crossings, perhaps because of the weather being clement. It seems to me, and I say this as the first generation son of a migrant mother and father, but it seems to me that there is no serious attempt by government in the United Kingdom to control this. And it didn't happen under Labour either. What's going on?
I can only conclude, because it's not a new thing, right? It's been going on for a while. And it's certainly not a logistical issue either. I can only conclude that there's a lack of will, a lack of direction of Border Patrol, Home Office to deal with the issue. I mean, we've seen in other nations that if you wanted to have a strong border, you can do. Israel being a great example, Australia for a time, turned every boat around that were found by the Australian Navy, and those were very effective measures at trying to control illegal migration. So I can only conclude that there's no political will and leadership to deal with the issue.
It's about 36 kilometers wide at the narrowest point, and perhaps 100 kilometers long or maybe 160 kilometers for the part that's most likely to be used. Is it really beyond the wit of humanity to police 160 kilometers of ocean when we've just seen some spectacular, wherever you stand on the Iran-Israel dispute, we've seen spectacular use of technology to apprehend 300 drones.
Well, no is my answer to that. I mean, we have we're the British Navy, we have Border Patrol. You know, I think if there was a will to do it, it could certainly be done. And even if you can't do it on the oceans, you could certainly do it on land when they show up. You know, when the boats show up. So
I think that's more difficult though, because dispersal takes minutes. I think that's that true. It's easier to do it when you're at sea. I've mentioned this before, but I do like the line. So apologies to those who've heard it before, but friends of mine, I think down in Margate, a ship's captain or a retired ship's captain said they call the border police or the border patrol boat the eternal flame because it never goes out. And it does seem that it wouldn't cost that much to have a fleet of drones guarding the border. They're happy enough to photograph us every few seconds when you walk around London. Millions and millions of cameras spying on British citizens. Why can't they have a fleet of, say, 10 drones, which just follow what's going on in the sea?
I don't, apart from the cost of it, I suppose, I don't see any reason why that can't be done. Yeah, so
not see UKIP policy on it.
I'll take that along to my colleague in UKIP who's looking at immigration policy.
I'm not trying to write your policy for you. I'm just asking. if I was in UKIP, then I suppose that's what I would be saying. I would be saying we're actually going to shut that border and have migration that we want. I mean, Seb says here, it's not even an ocean, Lambert. It's a narrow channel. Seb's right.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And Oz has gone mass immigration mad now too, all in lockstep, says Blodders. So feeling a bit disappointed there, I think. And Holly says it's totally controllable. This is all part of the invasion, divide and rule plan. And Red Squirrel Demise Revisited adds Seb, but Seb makes the, because Red Squirrels took over from the Grey Squirrels in an aggressive takeover bid in the UK. But Seb sums it up. It's not even an ocean. It's just a narrow channel.
A channel, yes.
It just seems extraordinary to me that if they were serious about controlling this, that they wouldn't step in. I work with the relocation sector. Lots of high-value people coming in, doing their work, doing what my mother and father said that they wanted to do, or at least the way they behaved. They integrated into British culture because they were pleased to be in the British culture. And they definitely contributed more than they took out of the system, I would say. So I'm not against people coming here, but what I'm not happy with is the stupidity where we're told that they're going to get the boat people under control, but then they don't do anything about it. And my suspicion might be that it's the cheap labor, which is quite propping up the economy. And without that, we might be in a bigger recession than we've been.
Okay, well, that's a complex one to take apart. When you say cheap labor propping up the economy, what they're doing is stagnating wages and depriving local people of entry point jobs, or low skilled or unskilled jobs. Depending, I suppose, on there was a recent, I believe, Dutch study about immigrants from different places and their likelihoods of actually contributing over the course of their lifetime to the economy. If most of the boat migrants, the illegal migrants, are from, not from Europe, I suppose, but from Africa and then other places further afield, then there makes it less likely that they would actually be net contributors to the economy. So the other side of the economic argument, and that we need these low skilled workers, I'm not actually convinced, and it's certainly not the position of quite a few parties, I would say, that we should take in untold, unvetted numbers, not just of illegals, but also of legal migrants, because our economy or NHS or even other sectors need labor. I would say there's no reason why we can't find the labor from within.
Yeah, I'm not sure there are many doctors and broadcasters coming across on the boats at the moment. So it's a fair point. I bet you that in a few weeks' time, when we have you on again, we'll be having exactly the same conversation. And every time there's a still day or still week of weather, there'll be another record or something close to a record. The ultimate irony, the Conservative Party, who said they'd get tough on all of this, presided over the largest net migration in the history of the UK. But there we go. I want to talk about, that's an unfinished business there, but we'll come back to it. And when you elect a leader, we'll get that person on as well. The other subject, which we need to touch on briefly, Iran-Israel, as I said at the beginning of the show today, here on today's News Talk TNT, a new level of escalation where Iran retaliated for the killing of senior commander of their military forces in an unsolicited attack in Syria. They responded. Very little damage in terms of death, But the first direct attack from Iran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, against Israel, without getting into who's guilty, because it's very complicated, I'll talk about that with a guest later on. What do you think should happen next?
Well, Israel is a sovereign state, so they can decide to do whatever they decide to do that is in their best interest. So my position is that I don't think the UK should be involved in the situation in the Middle East, aside from looking after our interests in the area. So whether we are citizens, companies, oil interests in the area, that's all we should be looking at, protecting our interests in the area. But I don't think we should be sending aid to any side, certainly not when we can't afford it because we're in debt. But I don't think we should, internationally, I don't think we should get involved.
Yet we are involved because we've had the leader of the opposition, Keir Starmer, and the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, saying almost identical things, saying, oh, carry on, Netanyahu, carry on in Gaza, 33,000 dead and counting, and now saying that the Iranians shouldn't have attacked Israel. Now, that's as may be, but it's worth remembering that that was a retaliation for an attack by Israel in the first place. We are embroiled in it. How do we get out of it? And how does the world get out of it?
Oof, you're asking me to solve...
You want to be in politics? You've got to have the answers.
Global international politics now.
That's your opinion. That's your opinion. Again, I'm not holding it.
Yes. So you know, our current leaders have a position that they hold, whether it is with the backing of their parties or not. If we elect a new leader, then our position will change. If our new leader is brave enough to stand on their position, they can announce it to the world and say our position has changed. And if it's backed up in a party manifesto, say I'm only going with what the manifesto policies are, and announce it to the world. You know, whether they would want to do it, say, in collaboration with other international colleagues, you know, with other countries, in a change of position, then that's up to them.
Very diplomatic and well beyond health and social care policy, so I'll let you off the hook there, but we will come back to this later on in the show. Real pleasure to speak with you, Dr. Chris Ho. Thanks very much for being on the show, and we'll get you back in a few weeks' time to probably have the same conversation about the boat people, since nothing's going to change in the short term. That was Dr. Chris Ho from UKIP. Coming up next, we've got a man who's been in the press for stopping a mayoral debate. Andreas Michley, the man who would be mayor of London in the United Kingdom, joins us to find out what's been going on in this week and why did he do it? And what would he do differently if he was in charge? All of that with me on the Lembotopic Show right here on today's News Talk TNT. I'll see you in a few minutes.